Welcome to the Gravity Podcast, where we host conversations on developing a Christian spirituality rooted in love that fosters resilient faith in everyday life.
There's a podcast on the horizon, and you may think it's the Gravity Commons podcast. It's not. I'm going to listen to some sports podcasts later today, and I'm really looking forward to those. So I was just letting you know what I'm going to be doing later on.
To cheer your Notre Dame Irishman on?
Yeah. I wasn't going to bring it up because I was feeling a little better.
Defeated? Sorry.
I was feeling better. But I do need to... I'm going to be in Wyoming for the next game, Christy.
Okay.
I'm going to be hiking in the Grand Tetons.
So you're not even going to watch it?
Well, I'll be camping at our base camp before we head out. And I am hoping that there is some kind of cell service and I will be sitting there watching it on my phone.
Hey, have fun in Wyoming. That's like a rock skipping a jump away from me.
It is. Although we're over in Jackson Hole. I bet you Jackson Hole is like 12 hours from you.
Okay, but it's 16? Way more out west than you are right now.
That's true.
Flat Indiana.
Did you say though, Christy... Did you say a rock, a skip, and a jump?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think that's what you say.
No, it's not. That's what.
It's going to be the new thing.
It reminds me of a hop, skip. It's a hop, skip, and
a jump. It's a hop, skip.
Well, when you're in Wyoming, you throw rocks, so it's fine.
Well, that's what I was wondering because my wife has a particular genius, I call it, of mixing two metaphors that sort of sound the same and sometimes mean similar things.
Yeah.
But often. They just sort of like come into her brain unbidden, and she mixes them up. Anyway, can I give you guys an example?
Yeah, let's do it. Go ahead.
One of my favorites that she ever did was she was frustrated that she had to she couldn't be planning out a certain aspect of her life at some point. I can't remember what it was, but it was like she constantly had to be spontaneous and make decisions in the moment. And she just turned to me and said, I feel like I'm shooting from the seat of my pants.
Ooh, I'm going to use that.
Isn't that amazing? I was like, wait, that's not quite right. That sounds like a junior high diarrhea joke, amazingly.
Oh, boy.
But she was mixing shooting from the hip and flying by the seat of my pants.
I love it.
Isn't that amazing?
That's a good one.
She didn't try to do that. That just comes out.
Does she keep reusing it? She should.
I'm trying to get it into our family lexicon, but
Now you can have a rock skip and a jump in there too.
We can jump.
Get a
shooting
list
from
together.
The seat of our pants. Anyway,
oh my goodness,
I've got a whole list of them. They're incredible, like totally incredible.
We recently hired another Christy onto the team. Christy is our admin expert. She's incredible.
Not me. It is confusing sometimes when you send emails. I just want you to know that.
It is.
I need a nickname.
Yeah.
I mean, I sometimes
call
you
say
CP.
Yeah, CP helps a lot. Yep.
Yeah.
Would you consider changing your name permanently?
No.
Okay. Just for the sake of the podcast? No? All right, fine. Thought you cared about
Sorry. Were you talking about Christy? Tell us about Christy.
Well, one of the things she is good at is she minds things for us. So she's minding sort of a lot of our administrative tasks, but she's also minding like this podcast. And she said, you guys should mention, ask people to leave a review or share it. And I was like, well, we never really do that.
Yeah.
And part of the reason I don't do that is because I notice when other people do it and I'm like, man, I'm kind of tired of hearing podcast hosts. I don't want anybody to tell me what to do, especially a podcast host. But listener, if you do enjoy the Gravity Commons podcast, which by the way, you've heard from a number of people who said they listened to every episode, and some of them wanted to remain anonymous.
Amazing.
Yeah. So I won't mention them by name, but if you do enjoy our podcast, it really helps us if you give us a 5-star rating and maybe a review. Mm-hmm. You can mention something about how good Christy balances out the, you know, insufferable hijinks of Ben and Matt. I don't know, something like that.
You mean and CP. CP. See, this is why it's confusing.
Yeah. We'll call her CP.
CP.
Yeah, so I'm just asking you to do that. Just brazenly asking you. for a favor. Do me a solid.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reason, you know, it's not just because our egos need to be stroked.
Yeah, I probably should say something.
But, you know, it helps other people find the podcast. It helps kind of grow the community of people that listen and can participate. And so if you're receiving some benefit, then, yeah, you know, let a neighbor know.
Yeah, that's how Mammon works, by the way. You know?
How?
Reviews and ratings, algorithms that drive traffic and make money for companies that aren't necessarily... You know what I'm saying? Like that, you know, the reason why we're asking you to do this is because we live in a system that is driven by attention and clicks for the sake of profit. And, you know, I think I could conceive of better systems, but it's the one we're in.
Yeah. We've got to live here.
Yeah.
I'm going to totally take a turn.
Oh.
Because, listen, we do this podcast thing and I see you guys like multiple times a week. But Ben, you're about to like go to a wedding. I did not even know that. Like how do I like talk to you every week and didn't even know that? I didn't even know your son was engaged. I feel like a terrible friend.
Yes. So I was trying to figure out which wedding you were talking about because you were like, you're about to go to a wedding. And I was like, well, that's not too unusual for people. But you're correct that my son is getting married.
Big old wedding.
Yeah.
Yes.
My son is getting married in a couple weeks and we're super excited.
Yay. I love weddings.
I haven't been to a wedding in a really long time, actually.
Okay, well, you're going to dance it up with Deb and eat cake and celebrate.
Eat cake.
Are you marrying them?
No.
Somebody else marrying you. You just get to be dad.
I get to just be dad, which I actually am super excited about.
Yeah, that's great.
I've married other family members, and it's like, I'm glad that you thought of me. But I'd rather just be your family member that kind of a wedding. So,
well, I want to see pictures. So,
okay,
make sure you send
pictures will be taken.
Okay,
you know who won't be going to that wedding, Christy?
You?
No, Regina Cates. She's an author, activist, podcaster, and founder of Romancing Your Soul, an organization that helps people develop lives of love, compassion, and purpose. Her first book, Lead with Your Heart, continues to be an inspiration to people who desire a more fulfilled life. And today we chatted with her about her latest book, The Real Conversation Jesus Wants Us to Have, A Call to Bravery, Peace, and Love. Let's get into it with Regina. Regina Cates, welcome to the Gravity Commons podcast.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Ben.
Excited to talk about these real conversations that Jesus wants us to have. But first, I wonder, by way of introduction, if you can tell us a bit about yourself, maybe how you grew up, what your faith looked like as a younger person, and then how that's shifted or changed for you over the years.
Wow, Matt, let's just hit a grand slam home run right off
the
bat.
20 seconds or so.
20 seconds or so.
Just kidding. No, take as long as you want.
Well, I tell you what, it took 7 years to put this on paper and about 68 years to live it. So I think that the best answer would be pick up the book and figure it out. I was raised in a fundamentalist Christian church in the southern part of the United States in the 1960s. And so being gay... and knowing this from a very early age put me into a position of questioning pretty much everything. I was the incorrigible child that said, but wait, because so many things didn't make sense to me and they still don't make sense to me. And that's another reason that I took a lot of time and effort and put a lot of love into writing this, asking questions that I don't think most of us really think about asking. But when you're put in that particular position, Matt, then especially, I don't know, I'm just a weird kid. I'm a weird adult, too. I have always thought about things that I think other people don't generally think about. And when you're outside of that box of what's acceptable, that's what caused me to begin thinking, and that's what caused me to question my faith. Being gay, being raised in this fundamentalist Christian church, actually, I think, gave me a big determination to stay in love with what I believe Jesus stood for when everybody was telling me that he hated me for being gay.
Mm. Yeah. So what I hear you saying, Regina, is in some ways like your social location being maybe a misfit or maybe on the outside looking in some ways of your of the culture you grew up in as a gay woman, that you feel like it positioned you better to see things that were maybe minority reports or to ask questions that other people weren't asking.
Yes, but am I that different, Matt? Am I really that different just because I'm LGBTQ? What about being a woman in the church? What about misogyny? What about patriarchy? What about all of the things that I address in the book? What about being black and brown? What about being an immigrant? What about being someone who's differently abled? What about someone who is poor? Jesus didn't hang out with billionaires. Jesus hung out with those people. Maybe he did. I don't think so. But he hung out with those people like the woman at the well. He hung out with the people who were lepers. He hung out with the marginalized of society. And so this book is not written specifically for LGBTQ folks.
Yeah.
This book is written for all of us that in some way or another are put into the box of other. And I think in every way or in all ways, at least we are in some ways, I'm trying to get this out correctly, guys. I think all of us are subject to this based upon someone's belief system when you try to put everybody into the same box. And I think that the box that we're all being put into is not the box that Jesus would want us to put anybody into because he was radically inclusive. Yeah. So it's not just me, Matt. It's a whole ton of folks that fit into this particular asking questions of our beliefs.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Regina, I wonder if you can share with us a little bit about the book that we're talking about. What prompted you to write it? How did this book come to be?
You know, Ben, thank you for asking that question. I get this question a lot, and I think it's because I love Jesus. I love what Jesus stood for, and I think that he has, at least in my lifetime, been radicalized by many people. I think that he has, like I said before, been put into a box that is not accurate. I think that the human being who is a representation of God on this earth asks us to love our neighbor as ourselves. And I think we've done a very horrible job of doing this throughout history. And to be honest with you, I believe that this particular book, and I know there's a lot of books out there, but this particular book asks so many questions about how we actually do love our neighbor as ourselves in modern day society with everything that's going on. It is not an easy task. So I spent my time sitting down thinking about what Jesus would actually ask us, the questions he would ask. Because as I say in the opening of the book, I think we'd all like to sit down with Jesus. But I think that we would also envision it to be him sharing his messages of love and peace and all of these other things. That's great. But what are the questions he would ask for us? Why are women still second-class citizens? Why is it that women don't have autonomy over their own bodies? I think there's a ton of questions that I ask. So the reason I wrote this book is to give people the freedom to ask the questions that I think Jesus would, that I don't see anybody asking really in as concise a way as I do in this particular work.
And now, a word from a sponsor.
The Gravity Podcast is sponsored by the Gravity Formation Course, a 12-month cohort-based training in practical spiritual formation, where you'll learn to notice how God is already at work in your life so you can participate more fully in the life God shares with us. It's a discipleship process that goes beyond just gaining more knowledge and trying some new practices. In the Gravity Formation Course, we go below the surface of our lives so we can notice and name our deepest desires in God's presence and discern how God is at work in those desires to lead us toward holistic flourishing, more transformation, more life, more joy, more love. We've trained hundreds of people from all over the world in this formation framework, and it has helped many to have a sense of God at work in their lives and learn to be more at home in God's love. If you'd like to learn more, go to gravitycommons.com/formation.
All right, let's get back into our conversation.
Yeah, you mentioned in the beginning of the book about how the presence of fear kind of plays into us avoiding dealing with you know, things that make us uncomfortable. Do you have a story from your own life, Regina, where you experienced that happening to you, where maybe fear or anxiety kept you from asking questions or exploring something, and then maybe you found yourself overcoming that?
Well, as I say in the book, you know the Sweat Lodge story, where I experienced an Inipi ceremony, which is an absolutely beautiful experience. I don't recommend it for everybody. It's not for everybody. It's 3.5 hours of intense heat. But it is the one transformational moment in my life where I knew that I was more than a body. I knew that my soul was strong. And I knew that fear can be overcome. The fear of death, the fear of becoming so hot and uncomfortable that we would never be able to breathe again. I go into great detail. And so this experience for me really sort of made me a superhero in a way, in that I know that I've got a human body, but I also know that I am much more than that. And that's what I speak to in this particular book. And I think we all need to face our fear. And one of the fears that we have, guys, is of asking hard questions and really getting to the answers. You know, we like to sweep stuff under the rug, and yet, boom, here we are. We've got this huge lump under the rug, and we're like, who's going to take care of that? Well, we have to unravel all of this stuff piece by piece.
Yeah. Yeah, that was one of the difficult questions that I hesitated asking for many years, and had to do with LGBTQ plus people. I was in a traditional sort of sexuality denomination, and I couldn't make sense of why there was a particular unique scapegoating of this population of people by those I was in communion with. And I resisted asking the question, why do we scapegoat them? Because I was really busy trying to fix that, right? So I was trying to name the problem and call people back to some sort of faithfulness. Like, let's stop making these people wear scarlet letters in terms of how we approach them and deal with them. And it was a reckoning for me to get under the surface and begin to ask, okay, why is being gay such a particular bugaboo in the Western white evangelical church? You bring up in your book how the Bible is used against the LGBTQIA plus community. And I know that conversation makes a lot of people uneasy, in part due to the weight it's been made to carry, which I was just referring to. It carries a lot of weight. But can you share a bit about how this is a conversation that Jesus wants us to have, and why you included it in your book?
Well, sure. Being part of that population, I wanted to know why I was different. Because, see, Matt, I knew when I was about four and a half or five years old. This is not uncommon. We just don't talk about it until we get together and we say, oh, yeah, I knew about it then, too. I didn't have a name for it back then, but I did know that I was different. I knew that I was wired different. So I started doing my own research, and I figured out through this research, and I quote many references in the book, that the seven clobber verses were created in a time when we didn't know anything about the origins of human sexuality, genetics, epigenetics, being in utero, all of these biological factors. So I began to unravel that as a life-saving necessity for myself.
Yes.
Because when you're sitting there and you're hearing from the pulpit, or you're hearing in Sunday school, you've read my little turtle story, which is very interesting. It's about eternity, that you're going to burn in hell for eternity because of something that you did not choose. Sexuality is not something that you choose. It is the way that you are born. However, people have a real difficulty with this, Matt, because if they begin to understand that the Bible was written so long ago, it has man's handprints all over it, and literally I mean men, okay, because those are the only folks that had any power. Today, that's still sort of a factor, isn't it? Very interesting. But I really had to unravel these things to save my own life. And if I was that powerful, people blame LGBTQ for so many things. Wouldn't we change the world for the better if we had this kind of power? You know, storms and all sorts of stuff. I certainly wouldn't wave my little magic fairy wand and create more havoc. I would create more peace.
Yeah. You do, you tackle patriarchy, speaking of, in this book.
A little bit.
I wonder, I wonder if you can just share a little bit about how your life has been impacted as a Christian by patriarchy and where you see the connection here between, like, how does patriarchy influence the way that we as Christians have thought about and talked about sex?
Well, Christianity and all world religions were written and created by men in a time that women didn't have absolutely any power.
Right.
God is labeled male, and so when you label God male, then male equals God in many people's eyes, the father, whatever. Therefore, as a woman, I have been subjected to men wanting to rule everything from the beginning of time. And I go into it in great detail in this book about the origins of these beliefs. And it basically, in my belief, Ben, and from my experience, it goes back to the labeling of the supreme consciousness by male authors in the Bible of being male. When life is birthed from female, why not just call God God? What? How far would that go in order to establish true equality? What do we have? Why do we have Eve as the person who is responsible for the downfall of Adam? Okay, women have been blamed for everything. Right. It's like, come on, guys, take some responsibility here. You know?
Yeah,
yeah. It's one of the one of the ironies I've always found about patriarchy is that that's actually supposedly what men are supposed to do. Right? Take responsibility, sacrifice, you know, that sort of thing. But then when it actually comes time to take responsibility for, say, the fall of humankind, you know, then it's like, well, no, that's Eve's fault. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
go ahead.
No, I agree with you because it's always women's fault, you know, and I think I go into it in great detail in the book as far as some of these guys who have written beautiful works about why men set themselves up above females, males set themselves up above females throughout history. Because when they realize that women are the only ones that can birth new life into the world, everything changed. I guess it was way back when someone figured that out. But again, we go back to the idea that the supreme consciousness is male. And in order, patriarchy will never solve the problem of patriarchy, guys, okay? It's not going to. It's just like, no, hey, I volunteer. Yeah. Gentlemen such as yourself, my best friend who I talk about in the book, I mean, there's a lot of good men out there that are not threatened by female energy. In fact, they embrace it and understand that we're stronger together than we are fighting one another.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Of course, those committed to patriarchy see it as the solution, not the problem. And so it can be difficult even to have a conversation about the dangers or damages of patriarchy with people who are committed to it as God's chosen way of ordering social hierarchies. And that's where I think towards the end of the book, you begin to name and speak explicitly about love, Regina. And I know that this has been your first book was about love in a lot of ways. And I wonder if you could help. How do you think about love? How do you describe love? And why do you see love as the antidote or the way forward through the things that trip us up?
Because Jesus was the ultimate in our belief system. Ambassador of love. And what I believe love is that it is caring and affection that is always displayed as positive behavior, even when we have to set boundaries. So, Matt, what you said about guys not wanting to relinquish power because they have set this system up, this system has been around for 2,000 years and it's not working. It is absolutely not working. And it doesn't matter if you're poor or whatever, it matters that you have power over somebody else. In the male, many of the men that I deal with on a daily basis, in their identity, it's that they have power over women, they have power over immigrants, they have power. But Jesus was, in our belief system, one of the most powerful entities, souls that ever live. And by the way, the soul does not have a gender. The soul is neutral. The soul just is. The soul just exists. So I believe that one of the greatest things that we have to overcome, guys, is the idea that God is male, exclusively male. Why can't we just have mother, father, all in all? Which is exactly how people who study Aramaic believe that Jesus addressed God. Mother, father, all in all.
Yeah, I mean, that would go a long way. You know, God definitely has they, them energy.
Yeah, but you've got to be willing to give up power too. And I think it's going to take a new generation. It's going to take guys like you. It's going to take teaching your sons. I know a lot of men today that are teaching their sons that we've got to change the world, guys, and we have to be the ones that do it. Yes. We're always going to have people that are stuck in this particular ideology, which to Jesus, I think, would be abhorrent. But we have to be the ones that change this through conversations, through books like mine, to just ask ourselves these questions in a way that we have to not be so threatened by these things. We have to look at the higher power and the higher wisdom. If Jesus was sitting next to us saying, hey, guys, you know, Mary Magdalene, my mother, these women were absolutely wonderful. I was an advocate for women. What are we doing?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we can end with this then, Regina. One of the aspects of human personality and one of the things that comes to bear in these uncomfortable conversations is our ego. And you talk in the book about how navigating sort of the claims that ego is making over us is tantamount to having uncomfortable conversations and even learning to, like you just referred to, relinquish power. Can you speak a bit about what you mean by the ego, and maybe share a bit about how you see that work being unto this love and caring for others?
Well, we have a healthy ego, Matt, and that is our good self-esteem. That is that we want equality for everyone. We want everybody to have enough to eat, shelter. That's a healthy ego. Unhealthy ego, and what I talk about in the book and what we have to overcome, is the idea that I'm better than you, that I get to make all of the rules for you, that you have to obey me. It's the idea that I can persecute you because I am the one that's right and just. So I talk a lot about in this book about how Jesus did not have an ego. I believe that the 40 days in the desert was him overcoming any of those problems, what we might consider would be Satan, in order to lead with the higher values of his soul, his heart. So I talk a lot about in this book, all of these questions that I ask is about how we unravel our human personal importance.
Yeah.
So we get down to the place where we can love one another. Sobbing in the homeless man's arms, that particular story I shared, or the story that I shared about Halloween when I was encountering racism for the first time, or bigotry and prejudice for the very first time at a very young age. These told me that there is something so much greater to our entity. And that is the prejudice and the bigotry comes from an ego that wants to be better and more important. Soul sees everybody as equal.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting the way you're using that language. I'm familiar with it, but maybe not conversant in it. And I think that what you're describing is like the ego is looking to create hierarchies based upon power, right? And we hold power in various ways, positional power, gendered power, etc. And part of learning to live in love is relinquishing those hierarchies that create privilege for some and oppression for others. Am I hearing you right?
That's correct. And that's why we have to do a lot of self-assessment to actually think, what are my beliefs? Why is it that I have to feel more important? Is it because I don't have love for myself as I am? You'll also know, Matt and Ben, that I talk about loving ourselves first in order to love others well. And right now, I do not believe as a world and as a society that we are loving ourselves first. Not selfish, but in very healthy ways, so that we know what it feels like to be patient and empathetic and accepting of ourselves first, so that we can offer those behaviors of love to others.
We'll be right back.
Let's get back to the show. I was just talking with a friend about this last night, Regina. I think many of us who grew up in similar religious environments that you did were taught that loving yourself was being selfish.
Oh, yes.
Or being self-centered, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's responsible, Matt.
Right.
It's responsible. Absolutely.
Yeah, what have you learned then? How have you recovered then the virtue of loving yourself? What has been helpful for you in doing that?
Writing 2 books about it, sharing my heart with the world for the past 20-something years after I left corporate America. Really taking up the job of healing me so that I didn't put my junk onto anybody else.
Yeah.
And I think that that's very important for us, certainly now in this environment, that we're putting our junk onto everybody else. And that makes us unhappy in the long run, Matt.
That is so important, Regina. I'm really glad you named that. Like one of the things that you have to do as you decide to take yourself seriously enough to love is to reckon with the ways that you've been wounded or harmed or injured, the propensity for evil or destruction that you have, and taking responsibility for that, taking dominion of that, right? And bringing, opening up to a modicum of healing or redemption or change or growth. It's so important, you know, especially as we live in a world where hurt people are hurting people.
Oh, absolutely.
And insecure men are seeking to find their security in the domination and oppression of others.
That's Regina, correct.
Regina, you have you do a lot of other things besides write books. You run an organization. Sometimes your podcast. Would you tell us a little bit about the other work you do and where people could find you if they wanted to search you out online?
Sure. I created Romancing Your Soul, and you can find my website at Romancing Your Soul or Regina V. Cates. I'm a presence on Facebook and other social media through Regina V. Cates. I do podcasts. Those are available through my website, Romancing Your Soul.
Great. Well, the book again is called The Real Conversation Jesus Wants Us to Have, A Call to Bravery, Peace, and Love. Regina, thanks so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. That was fun to talk with Regina.
Yeah.
I like her. She's got a little, I say this with all affection. She's got a little sass in her. You know?
I like the cut of her jib.
Yeah.
She's got an energy.
Yeah.
That is contagious.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. It's great. She was a lot of fun to talk to. So.
And I think I can get, I now that I have talked to her, mm-hmm. as I read her book, I'm like, "Oh yeah, that's the voice of this book."
It comes through in the
right?
book. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it totally does. And you can kind of tell with just by listening, a listener, mm-hmm. that Regina is quite adept at having uncomfortable conversations.
Yeah.
You know, that she's practiced at it, that mm-hmm. she is probably also competent at it as well. So I'm tickled. I don't use that phrase often.
Tickled pink, would you say?
Nope. Just tickled that, you know, her book is essentially a lot of what we do here on this podcast, right? So.
Right.
You know, we try to curate conversations that agitate, that foment, mm-hmm. that are iterative and generative to create something new, to move us forward, right? Mm-hmm. To bring about clarity and growth and consolation and sometimes disconsolation if we need it, because sometimes, by golly, we need it. So yes. I felt like the book was very much in line with who we are and what we do.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Got a dad joke?
Yeah, what has 5 toes and is not your foot? My foot.
Your foot. That was actually, that came to me just then. I was like, wait, anybody else's foot or my other foot? Yeah.
But in particular, I was talking about my foot.
Yeah. Yeah. In your mind, you were thinking about your own foot.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's right. One you can use with your 5-year-old.
Yeah.
They'll enjoy that.
Yeah, that's, and it's sort of as a, there's something about the brain development of 5-year-olds. I think that would be a fun joke for them.
Where
they,
yes.
You know, they're learning about you know, oh, other people have feet. I'm like other people, but different than other people. You know, it feels like a 5-year-old brain development thing. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Might blow their mind. All right.
Could be. All right, listener, we will catch you next week with another episode.
Yeah.
Peace.
See you then.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, please tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best advertising. Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast, and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To join discussions about the podcast and lots more, join us in the Gravity community. It's free to join, and you can connect there with other listeners to the podcast to talk about faith and spirituality and whatever else comes up. To join, go to gravitycommons.com/community. The Gravity Podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his mixing, engineering, and production work at aaronsternke.com. Finally, we would love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, you can go to gravitycommons.com/message and click the Start Recording button. You can also email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com. Catch you next time.